Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Womansplain. Today, we have a very special guest, Maddie Tuff. She is the CEO and co-founder of Steer, an exciting new marketing company. I'm going to pass it over to her to kind of give a little overview, and then we'll dive into her career journey.
Thanks so much, Brooke, and thank you, Sola, so much for having me. Yes, as Brooke mentioned, Steer is the first affiliate marketing company geared towards consumer service brands.
Very cool. So what is a consumer service brand versus a normal consumer brand?
Can you Yeah, of course. So it's a great question. So I group this as consumer products and consumer services, and we're focused on services. So when I say services, I mean anything like more experiential and tangible. So things like health, beauty, and wellness services to hospitality, to ticketed events, even things like financial services or home services. So
Okay. So like interior decorating.
You could even do that, sure. Yes.
I'm trying to give examples. Fitness classes. Got it.
Yeah, that's exactly where we're starting, actually.
Lymphatic drainage. Yes. Eyelashes. Okay.
Everything that we love.
Okay. I mean, honestly, that is where all of my money goes.
Yes. Me too.
Take my money.
So that's literally, like, basically makes sense.
Exactly.
I think my entire just category of discretionary spending is just fucking eyelashes, nails, and lymphatic drainage.
And,
spot on. And hair.
This is like what we need. So super excited to talk about Steer. But before we do that, let's start from the beginning.
Yes.
What did you study in college? And what was your first job after?
Okay, so it's an interesting story. I went to the University of Texas at Austin, and I actually, during my time there, changed my major 5 times.
But oh my God.
Ultimately,
okay, that's every semester.
I mean, it was a lot. Yeah. They saw a lot of me coming in and out, and I was figuring out what I wanted to do. And I appreciated college because I think it's a huge time for figuring out what you like and don't like, the trial and error period. But ultimately, I ended up in finance, and how I got there was, when I was a freshman, I had a really interesting opportunity to work part-time with Bumble, and they were working out of an apartment. I was, I think, their 11th employee, was working part-time, moved my classes to Tuesdays and Thursdays so I could work Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays.
Do you meet the Whitney Wolf?
Oh my gosh, yes. She was in the office in and out all the time.
That's so cool.
And they gave me so much responsibility to where I wouldn't even tell people I was, like, working with, like, my last name, so I didn't lose credibility since I was, like, an 18 or 19-year-old.
Wow.
It was awesome. And so I co-created their college marketing program called Bumble Honey, which is still in use today.
Wow.
They use it in Bumble Biz, they use it in Bumble BFF, and of course the regular Bumble Dating. But it was really fun because I felt like marketing was something that came natural to me. We got 50 female ambassadors at universities nationwide. Later, getting more male organizations involved, but we had them do these like weekly tasks just to get swipes, just to get app downloads and increase brand awareness. And it was more of a learning experience too, because beyond just having them do these marketing tools, we would have them do like life skills. Like, okay, now this week you're going to learn how to change a tire. So when I posted a TikTok the other day, I actually had like 3 girls reply to my story about being on working with Bumble. And they're like, you know, I was a Bumble honey under you. Like, these life skills are great. And I'm actually starting my own company now. So, like, thank you so much for the program. Love so that made me really, really happy to see. But anyways, so knew I loved marketing. I absolutely loved the startup scene. And knowing that, I knew I wanted to be a founder one day. But I was really intimidated because I didn't know finance and I didn't understand how we were getting funding. And so the obvious next course would be to get into McCombs, our business school, and declare finance as a major.
Yeah, and UT is a great undergraduate business
school. Yeah,
it's
great.
It was so, I mean, great opportunity.
So
right?
Great. I loved all of my professors. They were the absolute best. And so once I was in finance, I then did a lot of networking just to see what would be the best career path to make me a well-rounded founder. And the advice that I got from everyone was, you know, do investment banking or consulting, then do private equity. You will see what makes companies tick, what makes them fail, and you'll see a bunch of different CEOs and a ton of different transactions, and that's probably your best course. So I did just that. I did investment banking at Guggenheim, working in the energy group in Houston, Texas, and then later switched to buy side and moved to Dallas for an energy fund, then later switching to a consumer services PE fund.
Okay. Wow.
That's awesome. Okay, I feel so, like, yeah, we see a lot of founders that have this traditional type of path doing banking or consulting and then being a founder. But I feel like for you, you always had this entrepreneurial spirit. Yes. You're like, I want to be a founder one day.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah.
So when you're working in banking and PE, were you kind of actively thinking about what you wanted to start a company in, or was it just work, you
know,
all
gosh.
Consuming?
I think, gosh, I have this note in my phone, and it's like different ideas that I've been coming up with since I was 18. Wow. I started to create a company back when I was 18 in college. And then every year I'd have a win being like, I just want to be a founder. And the reality was, you know, I still needed to learn so much more. I've always had that entrepreneurial spirit. So it was a matter of time. It wasn't an if, it was a when.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think also you are pretty interesting in comparison to our other guests. Usually our other guests have kind of come in and been like, I'm going to be an investment banker, an investor for life. They do it for 4 or 5 years. They become kind of disillusioned. Yeah. Then they'll move into kind of a startup-y role that will kind of give them an entrepreneurial inspiration, and then they'll kind of start your company. But you actually kind of flipped the script.
Yes.
Where you're 18 years old working at Bumble. Tell me how that was probably your first work experience, right?
That was like my first real work experience where I was on, what was it, like W-2 or... Anyways, I can't even remember how much I was getting paid. And I think like the famous question I get asked in every interview I've had to date was, did you get stock? Sadly, I did not.
Sadly, no. As employee 11?
I know. So sad. But truthfully, I have them to thank for everything because it has driven so much passion. And it's really gotten me to where I am today. And I think back and I'm so grateful for those girls that I worked with.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So what do you think you learned at Bumble? I mean, what a kind of a crazy first work experience.
Yeah.
You know, the thing about like a more traditional path is like IB, PE, consulting trains you really well to work.
Right.
It teaches you really basic professionalism, like everything to how to write an email, to create a deck.
Totally.
So how do you think you were able to even learn those basic skills at kind of a crazy situation when you were employed at a startup?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I have my siblings to thank too, and my parents. They are the driving force behind where I am today as well. But what was really helpful with Bumble is I remember Whitney walking into like one of the rooms. We're working in an apartment building. So this is like probably a bedroom that we're working out of with the table. And I look at her and I'm like, well, what do you do when you don't know what to do? And she was like, I find someone who knows how to do it. And I mean, I think about that at least once a week because that is something, it's so obvious.
It's
that is
true.
Something I do
every
day of my life. That is why I've expanded my network so much. When you don't know, you're not going to know how to do everything. And like, that's just part of being in a startup. And so expanding your network and finding those people that do to talk to get advice from is so integral.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
So you were in banking, you did energy, and then you switched over to PE. At what point were you like, I can't do this anymore, or I don't want to, I'm going to start something new?
For banking, I think it was just the long hours. I knew what I was signing up for, and I actually really liked the grind a lot. I just remember there was this one merger that we're working on, and I was up to like 5 a.m. every night.
Energy,
and,
too, is like, there's no sweatier Houston, group. Yeah. There's
absolutely.
Group.
And
no
I'm
more,
just,
there's
and
literally
Google
no male, more male-dominated sweatier group to be in. Energy. I fucking
in Texas.
In Texas.
Yeah, like, that is rough. That is rough.
I loved it, though. My dad was in energy, and so I always thought, I was like, I'm going to be just like my dad. Like, I'm going to go into energy, and I really respected that, and I would try to learn from him. But ultimately, I am your quintessential consumer. Like, that is where I can add value. And so I'll go back to answering your question, but I think it's an interesting point as to why I switched from energy to consumer services. Mm-hmm. But what I recognize is you can't be at a on a buy-side role for energy if you don't have a lot of engineering experience. I personally did not feel like I was a value add because, mm-hmm. you know, you have to have that engineering operational experience. If you're going to look at this P&L and go through it and say, tell these owners, you should be doing this or you should be doing that or check out these numbers here. And so ultimately, as a consumer, and I accept cookies all the time. I want those targeted ads. I will buy anything. I just felt like it really resonated with me, and that was something that came supernatural. Mm. So that's when I switched into consumer PE. But ultimately, once I found the idea for Steer, which was during my time at my last fund, was when I was like, this is the idea. This is the one that I have full confidence in, and I'm willing to take that risk for.
For sure. Yeah. And also being an investor literally for the actual area that you're going to build in is going to give you a ton of advantages. Yeah. Like, obviously.
Absolutely.
Because then now you're going to be selling to the other side.
Yeah.
Also, as an investor, you know, like, I've did investing for 5 years. I also started in fintech, which is similar to energy.
Yes.
Very, very product expert.
Yes.
And I was like, I just don't care about payments. Like, I just honestly don't care. Like, yeah. I could literally care less. Like, totally. Objectively. And I realized, like, there will always be, like, a ceiling for me because I don't care.
Right.
Versus, like, and, like, energy is similar to this. You have to be a product expert to be a good investor. And you have to, like, really fucking love energy. So it's, like, it's good to switch. So you switch to consumer products. This is where you are. Or so consumer services investing. So
yes.
Were you kind of in growth or was it also buy side, PE?
It was buy side, yeah. Okay. So we would do majority stake. And when I was working with one of our portfolio companies, I was helping them roll out an affiliate marketing program because we were doing the whole PE thing where we had just acquired them. We were looking at their different lines of revenue and we saw that they were getting an insane amount of sales through these promo codes they were giving to micro influencers.
Cool.
So we wanted to give those influencers commission instead of just giving their influencers and their followers discounts. And so I was doing the whole PE thing where you look at all of the legacy softwares and the new softwares and you price them out, you see what they offer. And it dawned on me that these were all built for products. Nothing was built around services. And that struck me as odd because we were a consumer service private equity fund. And so I'm like, and you know, we had this whole portfolio, holdco, that was like salons. And that's something that, you know, when I'm looking at an influencer on Instagram, I'm like, I want to know where you're getting your highlights. I want to know where you're getting your Botox. Like, where are you going to work out? And so I was like, this is crazy. And so on the other side of things, I talked to a few friends that are influencers and I said, hey, when you partner with these service brands, like, how does that work? And they're like, oh, well, it's a huge pain. So like one friend use the lymphatic drainage massage example. And she said, I'll go to said company and I will get the massage and then they'll expect me to post and I just get gifted that massage. And, you know, for me, it's not really worth it because that's an hour long experience. And then it takes me 2 hours to make this content. Video,
yeah.
And yeah.
And
she's
I'm
like,
not really making any
and I'm not
make,
getting
it.
Anything off of it. Yeah. And then on the other end, too, I had another friend who was a partner with a hotel group. And she was like, they put me and my family up for about 2 days in exchange of a free stay. I just have to do like, say, 6 posts per month. And so it's unfortunate for the hotel side because they don't know that I'm bringing in any leads. And then for me, since they don't know that I'm bringing in any leads, I can't get any commission. So like, is that weekend stay and like that travel time really worth my time when I could be making money elsewhere? Okay. So where I saw this was like, okay, the light bulb went off. I was like, I need to figure this out. Like, why is no one doing this? And I had kept up with LTK and ShopMy, Grin for a while. I was fascinated about the business model. And so, I ultimately met some people, poked around, and recognized the tech stack, the differences in the tech stacks. And so all of those traditional softwares are built on marketplaces, so like Shopify, Amazon, WooCommerce, and we're built differently. We have to integrate differently to track those sales.
Got it. Yeah, I think that's like a huge white space, like as a food influencer as well. We talked about it. Like I get invited to restaurants all the time and like, you know, that meal is covered, but like I have to go eat, make the content and like, just that's it. Like I don't get any commission afterwards. And like the only way that the restaurants know, like people watch my videos and go in is like if they tell them.
Right.
So I think this is like a huge like white space that you can definitely tackle.
Yeah.
Also for the people working there, they have no idea what influencers are effective and not. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of visibility.
Know. Correct. Like it's so like there you can't like, I don't know, like the old thing, you can't do anything if you can't track it. So it's like actually gives you so much data.
It's so it's a data play, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, 100%.
It's more insight into your audience. It's more insight into audiences that you haven't yet hit.
Yes.
And I think the beauty of this, it's like everyone wants to be a part of it. You're discovering new things. Everyone's benefiting from it on both sides. So like the influencer is more inclined to post more because they're getting a commission off of it versus just like a gift. And then on the other side, the brand is getting more sales and
Yeah,
absolutely. And they're also able to compare different options for marketing. So they can look at like their basically traditional and non-traditional marketing plays and like compare which one's more
effective.
Exactly. Yeah. They can look at different target markets. Yeah. They can like also look at like their old, like they, you could probably sell influencer data for like their own tracking and knowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. It's a And also it really does take advantage of Gen Z trends of spending more money on experiences versus items.
Because right now I feel like it's just engagement. Like I feel like TikTok and other kind of platforms have engagement, but that's not like a one-to-one conversion.
Right. Rate either. Exactly.
So this is, great, great idea. So you had this idea when you were still in PE.
Yes.
At what point were you like, I'm going to pursue this full time?
I think it's just lots of late nights staying up and just constantly just trying to figure out the problem and the next step. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? You know, I want to move to New York. I'm looking at maybe doing other PE jobs. And like, this is my sign. I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to build this thing.
Wow.
And I think inevitably you're going to have that imposter syndrome. And there's lots of back and forth. Like, what the heck am I doing? Am I like ready for this? But like, no one's ever prepared for doing this. Like, you just have to commit and do it and put your head down and work like you always have. And when you find yourself working till 2:30 a.m. because you're just passionate about it, like, that should be a telltale sign.
Yeah,
absolutely. And how did you find your co-founder?
So I had actually been interviewing a bunch of different people, and ultimately I found him on the Y Combinator matching tool. And really? I wasn't going to take the call because I had never had luck on Y Combinator's matching tool, but what they do is match a non-technical person with a technical person. And I took the call, we started talking, I told him about the idea, and he had already been working on something similar in the space for another project that he was possibly going to do. And we continued the conversation. I had him join a call with a point of sale system that we were going to pilot with. And I said, hey, like, I really need someone technical here. He's very good at just boiling things down for a non-technical person. So I appreciate
That's a talent.
And like, I have to give a shout out to Noah because he makes me seem like I'm a technical person. And he has so much grace and patience for me when I ask questions, but he's so good at explaining everything that we're doing because I want to be in the know. I want to know what our capabilities are, what our, you know, ceilings are. So what I ended up doing though was I said, okay, I had like, you know, people that I'd worked with a little bit and not, and it's just, I think it's kind of a hit or miss. I think that's like really one of the biggest difficulties in starting a tech startup as a non-technical person is finding the right CTO. And so I said, I'll pay you to make this MVP. Let's see how we work together these next few months. And if it goes well, we can talk about co-finding this together. And ultimately, that's what we did. We worked together. We are so complementary in skill set. I really enjoy working with him. We like the same things, do the same things. And so it just makes it even more fun. He's such a positive person. And I think that is integral when building and, you know, especially in the early stages where there's so many ups and downs and things are inevitably going to break or not work the first time around. He is just a great partner to have in this.
Yeah, I think we've interviewed a lot of, you know, founders who are solo founders or have co-founders. Yeah. And what we've seen is like co-founders, you can, you know, work really, really well together or like completely opposite.
Yeah.
So it's really important for you to like find someone that has complementary skills. And I think that was great that you kind of had like a trial run of working with him.
Absolutely.
And then you could have, you know, pursued it or not. So, and he's based in New York.
Yes, he actually just moved to FIDAI. So I need to go drop him off a bottle of wine as a welcome gift because I have no idea what to get a boy as a welcome
gift.
Everyone
loves wine.
That's a win-win. Honestly, maybe that's a good affiliate marketing play. I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
You have lots of ones. I feel like pet services. That's a big
pet services. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. People love their pets.
I love my pets.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what do you think you really learned? Biggest things you think you learned from being on the buy side as an investor that like have made you a better founder?
I think you're constantly having to look at how much you spend and where you spend it. For us, we're not putting in a lot of money into marketing. Luckily, a lot of the brands and the influencers that will come on board will do that for us. But that's a lot of the time, like as a product brand, where your spend goes. And so I'm trying to do my best to put myself out there and be vulnerable and make a TikTok, which is like something I've never done. I wanted to edit it in iMovie because I have no idea.
I can help you.
Thank you.
iMovie. She calls me a boomer. I literally have no idea. I don't know what I'm doing.
It's just like, a lot of time. And like, you have no idea, like people have no idea what they're doing, but it's such an important tool to build a business as a founder, like from the ground
up. Especially one that's targeting the creator economy. Yeah.
Totally.
You can't like be a creator economy product and not understand the creators.
Absolutely.
Right?
Totally. I also think another thing that BuySide taught me most importantly is like when we're going out to fundraise, I'm very conscious of like the equity that we're giving away because VC fundraising is very different from PE fundraising and buying companies. And so definitely trying to be cognizant of that, not give away too much, but also have enough capital to grow, because we kept on going back and forth for a while on if we were going to fundraise or bootstrap. And ultimately what we've done so far is do a family and friends round. That's going to get us 8 months. I bootstrapped it for a little over 6 months, and that's always really hard because you're 27 moving to the most expensive city in the country, and you're just seeing your savings go down that you just saved from your previous jobs. But I think it's, you know, short-term risk, high, long-term reward. And so being really thrifty too.
Yeah.
That was a huge thing I've learned. People will throw money at things and hope that it sticks, but there's just such a methodical way to do it. And like, as long as you stick to a good business plan and you're able to be nimble as well and move on the fly, I think that's really important. And that's a lot of what I'm seeing right now as we beta test.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the product. So you have launched already.
Yes.
Right? So it's on mobile and web?
It's just web, but you can,
okay.
It's mobile friendly.
Okay. So if I'm an influencer, like how do I get on the platform and use it?
Yeah. So you go to usedear.io and you join the waitlist. You can also be invited from one of the three brands that we're beta testing with, Pvolve, Sweat440, and Othership. And if you are invited from them, you'll automatically get into the system. And you can apply to different campaigns. Right now, there are three active campaigns that you can apply to with those companies. Some are promos, some are affiliate links, and others are just like a monthly membership for posting. So the beauty of Steer is that as the brand, you have four ways to create a campaign. You could do the affiliate links, which is the commissionable links that take you to the brand's organic site that the influencer would post and say their story. There's promo codes, which give your followers like a discount, say Maddie20. There is gifting, and there is flat rate. Flat rate being like, okay, we'll give you $200 for like two posts. So you, as the influencer, you get to choose which types of campaigns you want to do. And I think what will be interesting is to see what sizes of influencers pick what. Because I think right now what we're trying to do is bridge the gap so everyone's getting some sort of like monetary compensation.
Are you targeting, so you're targeting influencers as your paid clients, not brands?
So the brands are paying the monthly subscription to be on Steer.
Okay.
And there's a take rate. This is just very typical of affiliate marketing softwares.
Yeah.
We mimicked the legacy softwares. We mimicked the newer ones like the LTK and ShopMize. But take rate is basically where we get a cut of the influencer's commission as almost like a service fee of them being on there, but it's ultimately paid by the brand.
Got it.
Okay. Are you going to ultimately work with influencer managers as well?
Yeah, I think we're really open. I think there's a lot of different ways to unlock this. You know, I would like to work with influencers of all sizes, but I think it'd be cool to work with agencies. I think you could even work with like things like newspapers, like Paper City, or like, I don't know, like Dallas Mag. So many different options. So it'll be interesting to see what comes to fruition, but I am talking to a marketing agency pretty soon that has a bunch of different influencers in their portfolio. So like if that's something that they want to discuss as well.
For sure. Do you provide any sort of matching service or like recommendations based on the
Okay. So not yet, but sorry, I said yes. But in our phase two, what we really want to do is integrate Meta's Graph API and TikTok's as well. And so that way it unlocks this influencer discoverability tool, and ultimately like what we want to do is add an AI component where it is like matching like your brand mantra to an influencer that kind of embodies what you're selling. But then on top of that, I think it'll be really interesting for brand awareness to expand into different markets and different audiences and not just going for the customer that they typically go for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like it's that you can leverage AI in so many different ways.
Oh, absolutely.
And also just like open up a lot of these also they're like kind of more traditional older companies that you're probably marketing for like a lot in travel, hospitality, restaurants, can definitely sort of open up their traditional marketing channels for sure.
Absolutely.
And if you're providing sort of new suggestions, I feel like you can definitely break down a lot of barriers that they've had in that industry as well.
It's really interesting, I'll say, because we're not reinventing the wheel. We're using new tools that are available at hand. Like this is like guerrilla marketing. This is like word of mouth marketing. But we're just using these new tools like social media to really make these companies explode into the day and age of who they're marketing to.
You're also just kind of like breaking down and opening up even the options that a lot of these like probably more old school marketing departments
yes.
are creating. So I think they haven't even thought of this as an option.
This is what I was going to say.
And yeah, and I think you're just basically opening up that as an option in a channel of marketing. And it honestly is probably cheaper, more effective, yeah, and a lot more sustainable.
So how we're seeing these services companies do influencer marketing currently is that it's incredibly manual. They are finding these influencers, handpicking them on Instagram, or the influencers are DMing them on Instagram. And then they're giving them either promos or gifting. And the way that they're tracking it is through like an Excel spreadsheet. I mean, it is so manual. I can't even imagine the time it takes. And when I go, I've talked to upwards at least of like 40 different companies, and that's how they're all handling it. So there's just no solution. Like, they're either having to combine a bunch of different softwares that are very costly and make do with it, or they're going to have to hire a PR company, which, like, again, there's no tracking. That's also costly and it's very timely. Or you're going to have to hire someone in-house to handle that, which, again, timely, costly.
Yeah. So it's like a win-win situation for them to sign up for Steer, even though it might be however much per month, but they'd rather have that and like get access to the data.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be really cool too, because you'll get to see a lot of your customer data as well and where they're, the channels that they're coming from. So I'm really excited to see what we're going to do with all the data that we have at hand and how we show it to these brands.
I think New York is such a good place to start something like this, because as like we talked about earlier, like, we go to all these places and like the demographic, I think, like, kind of uses the same like products, services. Yes. So it's definitely a good place to launch.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I walk in, I was going through TSA the other day and I was on a phone call with an investor and she overheard the guard and she's like, wait, do you have an influencer platform? She's like, I want to get on it. She's like, I'm an influencer. I'm like, great. Oh my gosh. I go to create a bank account, and the girl who's helping me, she's like, let me pull you inside. I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, I'm actually an influencer. I think this is great. I'm like, all right, everyone's an influencer.
Everyone, yeah. Doesn't matter like how many followers you have.
Right, no, definitely. Totally. Yeah. Well, like, that's what I love too. And I think that's a huge trend that's coming up, is like, we're moving from the influencer to the creator, and that the creator doesn't have to have some like insane following. And actually the creators have the better conversion, because it's like more organic seeming.
Totally.
It's very authentic.
Relatable, and will tend to have more of a niche.
Yes, exactly. And an interesting, yes. I love that.
Yeah, we'll get on the platform.
Perfect, please do.
Yes. So tell me about what you do on like a normal day. I know that you have a technical co-founder. I'm sure he does all the more technical things. How are you spending your time?
Yeah, absolutely. So, gosh, every day is different. And really, the real question to that is, you're tending to whichever is the biggest in priority and problem of that day, even though you might have things scheduled. But I will do investor calls, networking calls. I will be running around the city to founder events. I will be making social media posts. I will do all the administrative tasks. Like, right now, I just got us on payroll, so I figured out how to use Gusto. I found a bookkeeping service on Inkle and tax platform, talking with lawyers about how to set up things now and how we can later expand and what that would look like. It really is, you're wearing multiple hats every day. So it really changes. So every day is very different. But lately, since we've been heads down with beta testing, it's just talking to Noah basically the entire day, looking at the product, seeing the data come in, and getting feedback from our customers, then iterating.
And how are you like figuring out how to do these admin tasks that you probably have never done before? Like, have mentors in the space? Are there other founders that you work with and share knowledge with?
A lot of that, yes. Also, you just hear that you go to these events. No one's going to tell you. I had no idea. Like, I should probably get a bookkeeping, and then I had to do these taxes. I remember when I first did, I missed some tax filing last year because I incorporated 2 years ago before I actually started the business. And I go in to pay the tax filing, and it says that I owed like $100,000, and like my heart dropped. And I called the service and I was like, this can't be real. Like, I'm burning money. I don't even have money. Like, what do I do?
Negative.
Like, I think this means I'm bankrupt. So a lot of that is just, learning that on the fly. ChatGPT, God bless.
Yeah. God bless. Yeah.
That's a lot of it too. But really talking to people that I meet at these founder events have been crucial to that. Someone always has a solution for it.
Yeah. And your co-founder, you said, had also worked on his own startup before.
Yes. Yeah. He had a startup prior. So he's a second time founder. His first company was called Data Earn. And then it's still going. But this is, he's like, this is the $1 billion company. Yeah. This is what we're doing.
Love that.
So
I'm excited to. Yeah, I feel like that's great to have that sort of in your back pocket too.
It's been really helpful. There's things that he, I think, knew. Well, no, there's definitely things that he knew and is like very helpful with and will tell me ahead of time. So going back to, I guess, like these administrative tasks, like he's like, we should be doing this. We should be doing this for like lawyers. Here's how I've gone to, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think that's super helpful for being a first time founder.
Absolutely.
Right?
What do you think has been the biggest challenge so far?
Oh, gosh. I think, and this has always been a challenge for me in banking and in private equity too, is having to build that time, that extra added time, just knowing that things aren't always going to go as planned. So it's like when I was in PE, we would always do our base case with, like when building a model with like a 20% contingency fee for CapEx. Like that's what I do with when I promise customers like when things are going to be done. I'm like, okay, no, this is our deadline, but this is what we're going to tell them. Yeah. Because things will, like shit will hit the fan.
Totally. Yeah.
So I think it's just managing that and managing expectations.
For sure. I mean, under promise and over deliver.
Right? Yeah. Amen.
Always.
Yes.
But then you're also getting pushed back from the other side. So it's always easier. Sometimes it's just easier said than done, but like it is a good, it's a good attitude to frame that for yourself.
Absolutely.
It really is. It's going to do it for yourself too. It honestly is to like give yourself some grace.
Grace, yeah.
I mean, like you're a perfectionist.
If yes.
You know, it's good to give yourself some grace and just know things are going to go wrong. And just as long as you have time to manage it. And what do you, like, where do you see Steer going in the next 5 years? Like, what are you so excited about?
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited to just go into so many different sectors. I personally right now I'm really excited about ticketed events. We've seen a lot of sports teams do affiliate marketing but not have the tools and resources, and Noah, my co-founder, actually played basketball at NYU, so this
they
is like a fun project.
Oh yeah, NYU not
sports. So he's excited for that because I mean this could traditionally be like such a girly industry, but I think it's like bridging the gap too into like those male creators.
Services
as well
are actually a lot more gender parity because travel, experiences, hospitality, event planning, those things are like a lot more 50-50 than I think just consumer products.
Absolutely. I really think so too. So really it's just expanding into new markets and then growing our team. I'm really excited. Our first hire will definitely be another engineer, given that we are a software company. And then thereafter it would be someone in sales and marketing. So I'm excited to build that out, have that camaraderie, and then like hopefully have a co-working space for all of us to work at. Really excited to fundraise with all of that being said and see how far we can get with it.
That's amazing. What are you aiming for? So this would be like a seed round?
I guess. I think we're, so we initially started talking about doing a seed round for $2 million, but lately we've been seeing that. And let me just preface with like, I'm so used to like PE valuations and fundraisers. So like, this is newer for me. I'm figuring it out. But what we're ultimately going to do in the next couple of months is do probably a $1.5 to $2 million pre-seed round.
Okay.
We've had interest. I've been doing investor coffee chats and calls kind of the last 3 months and just expanding my network in New York. And that's been really good because I think it's like, you know, you're getting momentum. You make these connections. Now it's like every month we're sending these investor updates. So I think once we're ready and we can prove traction and that there's a plan for growth, we'll be off to the races.
I know there's been a huge trend in creator-focused funds. Like, I know Slow Ventures just came out.
Yeah.
I think Daybreak has a focus.
Yes,
Do you think you'd be able to, you know, basically get invested from these creator-focused funds as well?
Absolutely. Something that we have been wanting to do is, in this pre-seed round, get angels that are creators, actually. Angel investors who are creating themselves, that are investing themselves. And then on top of that, getting VCs that are really knowledgeable of the industry. I mean, having gone through probably 40 VC coffee chats now, it's crazy.
I love this.
This is like investor relations is like my favorite part, honestly. I love the personal connection and just telling everyone about my excitement for this company. With these VC coffee chats, like everyone has a specific focus in a sector that they're interested in. But what we really want to do is partner with people that understand affiliate marketing to its core, because that's so important. When you think of like when you're working in PE, like you want to be a master at something. You want to be an expert in an area that you can provide value. And I still see that. Like I don't want just capital from VCs. I want someone who is excited about this industry. I want someone who is knowledgeable about this industry, has the right person for me to talk to you when I can't go out on LinkedIn or go through my network and find that person myself. So that's really important to me. And I think it's like dating, you know, you kind of have to go for what you want and make sure it's a perfect match.
Yeah,
I'll let you guys know when it's said and done, but that's how I'm planning to go about this.
And how are you finding these investors to chat with?
Gosh, LinkedIn, my network, people have, even like TikTok, word of mouth from friends and just outreach, people seeing my posts, other VCs saying like, oh, we might not be a fit for this industry, but like, let me connect you with so-and-so and so-and-so. That I think was a really interesting part too, because there's no special way of doing it. Like I'm so used to like a certain process in hand. Right. And for this, it's like, no, you just need to figure out who's what position and where, and you go after them. And even if it's like showing up at their door, not actually, like, just get an in somehow. Yeah.
I think New York is such a good place to build, because I feel like with when you think about consumer tech and VC, it's always been in the Bay, but now
absolutely.
The last couple of years, it's, you know, it's all here.
They call it Soho Valley now, and I agree. I'm going to 3 to 4 networking events for founders and investors a week, and so it has been incredible. I feel like I'm making a name for myself. I feel like I'm just really expanding my network, finding great tools and resources, and the most fun part about being in this startup world is working with VCs. It's just such a positive culture and it's addicting. I love it.
That's awesome. Well, I feel like this has been an amazing episode. I learned so much about you. I'm so excited to see where Steer goes.
Thank you.
We always end on, what advice would you give a young person who wants to start their own company?
Yeah.
And so I would love to hear that.
Perfect. Okay. This is something I think about often. When you want to start your own company, make sure you have the right idea. When you know what you want to do in life, make sure you have that right idea and you know how to get there. And when you get out of college, you just have to work backwards to take those steps to get to where you need to be. So that's my best advice, is know where you want to go, work backwards, and start there.
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on, Maddie. This is awesome. So where can we find you?
Oh my gosh, you can find me on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok. I can send you guys my handles. They're all perfect. Kind of different.
Okay, good.
So you're building on like your personal currently, or are you using the Steer?
I'm using my personal.
Okay.
Definitely follow Steer too. We just haven't started posting yet.
Awesome. Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, guys. Thanks for listening. Thank you so much, Maddie. You can find us at Womansplain Pod on Instagram and TikTok. And please reach out to us, womansplainpod1@gmail.com.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.